Good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
Welcome to Simple Actions, group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Stephanie, and I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Stephanie.
For those who care to join us, please open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God.
Grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up the small flight of stairs over there to the left. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. I will now read the preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are on step two. Please welcome our panel. We have Mark and Amy. All right, so I will read the first paragraph on page 44, and then they will take turns sharing their experience, strength, and hope. All right, step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity, on page 44. In the preceding chapters, you have learned something of alcoholism. We hope we have made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. If when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably an alcoholic. If that be the case, you are suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. To one who feels he is atheist or agnostic, such an experience seems impossible, but to continue as he is means disaster, especially if he is an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. To be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face. But it isn't so difficult. About half our fellowship were of exactly that type. At first, some of us tried to avoid the issue, hoping against hope that we were not true alcoholics. But after a while, But after a while, we had to face the fact that we must find a spiritual basis of life, or else. Perhaps it's going to be that way with you. But cheer up, something like half of us thought we were atheist or agnostic. Our experience shows that you need not to be disconcerted. If a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered long ago. But we found that such codes and philosophies did not save us no matter how much we tried. We could not wish to be moral. We could wish to be philosophically comforted. In fact, we could will these things with all our might, but the needed power wasn't there. Our human resources, as marshaled by the will, were not sufficient. They failed utterly. Lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously. But where and how would we find this power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main objective is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. Amy, do you
want to
go first?
Okay. My name is Amy, and I'm an alcoholic.
Amy.
My sobriety date is May 9th, 1994. My home group is this group, Simple Actions. Probably the first 100 times I read this chapter, I barely read it at all because the title is We Agnostics, and I am not an agnostic. I went to Norfolk Christian School over on Granby and Thole. I knew exactly who Jesus was. Jesus was who my mother said was going to save us from my father's alcoholism. I knew all of it, knew the Bible, blah, blah, blah. I could not possibly be an agnostic. And then I got a sponsor who took me through the steps by turning all of these sentences into questions that I ask myself. So I find out what is my experience with this book? How do I make this personal to me? And I said to her, well, we probably don't need to read that chapter at all because I'm definitely not agnostic. And she said, well, if you have a vocabulary issue, which really got me because I'm the smartest person in the room, I do not have vocabulary issues. But she said, if you have a vocabulary issue with the word agnostic, read that as we self-reliant. We self-reliant. And I didn't really get that, but almost this entire first page is kind of explaining that to me. I look at the sentence, to be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual base is not always easy alternatives to face. Well, they should be. Who wants to die? Who wants to screw over everybody they know? Who wants to break their mother's heart? Who wants to never have any money? Who wants to, you know, just never do right, really? It should be easy. But here's the reason why it's not. Because life on a spiritual basis means I'm going to give up my will and my life. Now, that's coming later. But my will are my thoughts and my life are my actions. So when I think about it that way, I'm going to turn over my thoughts and my actions. Well, no, I'm not, because I already told you I'm the smartest person in the room. Why would I do that? I have a drinking problem. And I used to hear people in meetings say stuff like, I have a living problem, or I have a thinking problem, and I don't know about all that. But what I do know is that this is about me, and it's talking about how my self-reliance leads me to obsessive thinking, not just obsessive thinking about alcohol, but obsessive thinking about anything. If you say something nasty to me or just roll your eye in my direction, you know, a hairy eyeball, I'll be thinking about it a month later. I wonder why they were doing that. I mean, I have obsessions of the mind, and those obsessions of the mind check me out of the moment and out of the day. I can't live my life effectively, and I couldn't live my life effectively anyway, because my big secret behind how smart I am and how great I am was that I have no flipping idea what I'm doing all of the time. I'm so afraid you're going to find out I don't know what I'm doing. So I appear to be self-reliant. I appear to be on the ball. you know, one of the roles that I play is large and in charge. I always look like I'm out to kick ass and take names and blah, blah, blah. But that's just a role that I played. You know, I played the role of being the good daughter. I played the role of being the polite junior leaguer. I've played the role of being the corporate, you know, climbing the corporate ladder. None of those things were who I really was, but in the absence of having any idea at all of who I was or who God made me to be, I defaulted into all these roles. I played all these characters. And if you got close enough to me, you'd find out I have no idea what I'm doing. I mean, the roles are good as far as they go. I mean, like, if I'm in the role of femme fatale and I'm out to get laid, I wear sexy clothes. You know, I tell dirty jokes so that people will be, you know, think that I'm earthy or whatever. If I'm climbing the corporate ladder for success, I wear suits and I talk, you know, about value added and moving forward and blah, blah, blah. It really gives me a place to hang my hat. It's a way for me to live. But that's because I don't know who I am. I don't really know what I'm supposed to be doing. And the fear, that fear that you'll find out that I'm empty, that there's nothing there, that is what drives me to have to pick up a drink. You know, not only do I have a body that is never going to stop me from taking the second drink, I have a mind that cannot stop me from taking the first one. It says right here in this first sentence, in the preceding chapters, you have learned something of alcoholism. Okay, have I learned something about alcoholism in the preceding chapters? Yes. I have a physical allergy. I have obsessions of the mind. Now I'm going to find out about that unmanageability part, that spiritual malady that everybody has. But for people like me, it's deadly. What I found out was that my alcoholism means that no matter how much knowledge I gain about the disease, it's not going to be enough to stop me. My alcoholism also means that my resolve is always going to fail. And I mean, I've got resolve. I am totally a person that will cut off my nose to spite my face. If you make me mad, I'm telling you, even if you had $1 million to pay me every day of my life, I would turn my back on you and never speak to you again. And I used to be really proud of that kind of crap. You know, I'm strong. And I also find out in this chapter that I am organically, irreversibly agnostic. It is my humanity. It is my ego. I cannot outrun my ego. I cannot strip out that human part of me that thinks everybody else knows what they're doing. I need to know what I'm doing too. Because that's what I thought. I thought everyone else looks like they know what they're doing. But I never did. I remember in the fifth grade when boys and girls, I mean, it may be a lot sooner than that now with steroids, but I don't know. Anyway, back then it was about the fifth grade. And boys and girls started liking each other and they would hold hands. They'd pass notes. Do you like me? Check yes or no. I hated all that stuff. I like went straight to the, I mean, not intercourse in the fifth grade, but I mean, I went straight to the big stuff because that getting to know you phase, that's way too sketchy for me. That's way too uncomfortable. I'd rather just go for it, get in it, be in it, and go on, act like I know what I'm doing. Except I never knew what I was doing. So the dictionary definitions of atheist and agnostic, the atheist denies there is a God, and the agnostic believes there is a God, but it doesn't really have anything to do with me. Now, I believe that God had something to do with me on the big stuff, you know, like help me graduate from college, or help me get this job, or help me get this guy, or whatever plan I had hatched, because I was always hatching a plan. That's another thing that offends me, is when the big book talks about our little plans and designs, because mine are never little. But I've just completely lost my train of thought. Oh, but I did not think that God had anything to do with the getting up and getting through the day stuff. It just never occurred to me. I mean, yes, it's reasonable that you would pray when you get up. Yes, it's reasonable that you would go pray when you go to sleep. But actually living the day, practicing the presence of God, actually, there's this great prayer, and it says, "Oh God, wake me, break me, and make me." And I got here, and it started waking me up. and I didn't really want to be broken, but this is talking about you're going to have to be broken. And it is in that breaking that there will be the making of me. So we had to face the fact that we would find a spiritual life. So it's not that easy of a thing. When I think about it in these terms that I'm not going to pray anymore, oh God, help me to keep my job, because what do I know? I mean, it might not even be the right job for me. It's right because it's paying my bills, but it may not be God's will for me to be there. Am I willing to go that far in turning myself over? Am I willing to just kind of fly blind and admit that I have no idea what I'm doing? Surely God will do a better job than I will. That's kind of hard for me to get to. I don't think anyone's going to do a better job than I am. Even though I have tons of evidence in my past to the contrary, that I screw up everything I touch, especially when I'm trying my hardest. That's when I really screw things up. And then we get down to this, if a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life, blah, 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 blah. I took every class on religion, every class on philosophy, went to every kind of therapist. Because, of course, spending a gajillion dollars and blowing through how many brain cells trying to educate myself is much easier than admitting that I'm an alcoholic and showing up here, which is only going to cost me a buck a day at the most. So I had to pursue all of these things. I had to. Page 46 says, wait, where is it? We would have recovered long ago, page 45. But we found that such codes and blah, 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 blah. We could wish to be more. We could wish to be comforted. In fact, we could wish these things with all our might, but the need and power wasn't there. I really had to bring all of my human resources, including my big, fabulous brain, to bear on these problems. And I got nowhere. Nowhere. I couldn't move fast enough to outrun the lies. I couldn't keep shoring up all the stories so that you never talk to you because you know more about the story than you know, and the two of y'all can't be friends, so I got to manipulate and maneuver and just massage everything all the time. Because basically I believe that the world is a hostile place, and I really don't like anybody, and I especially don't like myself. That's what my alcoholism does to me, and that has nothing to do with a substance. That's that ism, that I, self, and me that I'm left with when the substance is taken out of the picture. And so that makes this sentence really big for me. Lack of power, that was our dilemma. It had to be a power greater than ourselves. And I don't think that I came to this out of virtue that, oh, I'm going to surrender, I'm going to believe in God. I really had to bust butt to convince myself, put all of my power on this problem, and get absolutely nowhere before I was able to say, okay, my goose is cooked. I cannot fix this. That movie Flight with Denzel Washington, that he's an alcoholic in that movie. Anyway, he says this great line. He says, somebody says to him, what was it that this was the time for you to get sober? I'm sure I'm ruining it, but anyway. And what he says was, I woke up one day and I just couldn't tell another lie. And for me, that's what this chapter is about, because the lie is that I'm self-reliant. The lie is that I know what I'm doing. And I mean, I always look like I know what I'm doing because I have to. I'm not going to look like an idiot in front of everyone. But the truth is, I have no idea what I'm doing. Honestly, I should be praying every time I open my mouth. The Buddhists say that the mouth is the front gate of all misfortune, and that is absolutely true for me. So not only should I be inviting God in if I'm in a bar or I'm around people who are drinking or I'm around people who are gossiping, because I really like getting into that, all this other stuff, not only do I need to invite God into those things, I need to invite God into the space between those things. When I'm just sitting around minding my own business, because I can get in trouble just sitting around minding my own business. I'm sure that's plenty. You go ahead. Stop. Sorry.
I was just kidding. All right, I'm Mark. I am an alcoholic. Happy with you tonight. My sobriety date is February 20th, coming up next month, 1987. And I assure you, on February 20th, 1987, I wasn't the same person I am tonight sitting here. I was a man that was in tears on my knees, praying to a God that I did not want to believe in. I wasn't even sure there was one. And did for me what I couldn't do for myself. I drank daily, except when I got on my fishing boat. I was captain of a commercial fishing boat. And I'd go out to sea, and when I got back home, I was a binge drinker, so I just drank until I got back in the boat, and I'd go back out to sea. Great job for a drunk. And anyway, so came to believe in a power greater than myself, who restored me to sanity. I was struggling with from the sanity part to the believer part. And one of the things that strikes me on this is could restore me to sanity. And that day that I was that person on my knees asking God to help me, I got that wisdom right up at Largemont at 12 and 12, about 35 years ago, from a bunch of drunks sitting around a table. And I went up there and told them I was an alcoholic. And those men and women, very fortunate, was a group that had men and women at it, told me that there was that I didn't have to live my life like that any longer, that I did not have to drink, and there was a power greater than myself. And I looked at those guys and I felt compassion and love like I never had before in my life. And I did what most alcoholics do. I went back out drinking. my wife Ellie's with me tonight. She's back in the back there with my sister, and she eventually went to Al-Anon, and we came back to this program. There was a lot of Al-Anons at that meeting that night. We were up there. You know, the part in here that gets me is, you know, die an alcoholic death or have a spiritual experience. And, you know, it doesn't seem like a hard choice 30 years gone by, but I was struggling with that. I would drink to find that other choice, you know. That's what I was looking for. I was looking for that other choice. And I knew those guys had it. I knew that George up there and those guys around that table, they had it. And as I drank, I got defeated, and I went to Catholic school growing up, but by the time I got here in the program, I was more of a great spirit sort of guy. I believed in the great spirit. I always thought there was some sort of redemption and fairness in life, and I knew that my biggest fear, my biggest problems was not being able to handle the truth. And that was that, you know, I was an alcoholic and there was nothing going to save me but a spiritual experience. So I was like, whoa, that's enough to make a person drink. And I did that for many, many years. And all right, let's see. That was a whole lot of reading you did there. Let's see. You know, but it isn't so difficult. It really isn't. The defeat of alcoholism, the incomprehensible demoralization. I would, you know, when I'd go out at night, I'd make sure I had real dark jeans on in case I fell asleep in someone's couch. But I, you know, wetted myself, I could sneak out early. And I did that regularly. Is you know, there's a wardrobe made specially for people like me, and I had plenty of it, I'll tell you. And you know, in the code, the thing about the code of morals and a better philosophy of life for certificate to overcome alcoholism, if my will or your will for me and my will for you could cure alcoholism, my wife would have cured me years ago, I'll tell you that. And that is something that I fought with day in and day out, that I thought I had it made. I was captain of the fishing boat. I went to sea. I didn't drink while I was at sea. And when I came home, it just all started to unwind again. So that's the big thing for me, is the will, turning the willpower into an a spiritual experience. And I didn't truly have to believe a whole lot to do that. I didn't need any religious background. I didn't need a discipline. I just needed to believe. And when you drink the way I did, and then you wake up the next day and you don't take a drink, and you go day after day and you don't take a drink, you know, you all know what that feels like, and that feels like a spiritual awakening to me. And so I had, the lack of power was the dilemma. No doubt, I did not have the power. And in the obsession of the mind constantly told me time and time again that I did have the power. I just needed to find the power. And I searched and I searched for that power. And, all because of an early stages, I could drink a fifth of rum, a couple six packs of beer, and drive home, or be the guy that drives everybody home. You know, by the time it was all done, I was the guy that, runs into the trees, 5 drunk driving tickets. And so time and time again, I tried and tried to feel like that I had the power that I did not have. So it's like it says, this book says, how we're going to find that power. And I think I'll stop there. We're going to read some more, right?
We are. Yeah. All right. Our next reading's on page 46. Much to our belief, we discovered we did not need to consider another's conception of God. Our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach and to effect a contact with him. As soon as we admitted the possible existence of a creative intelligence, a spirit of the universe underlying the totality of things, we began to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction, provided we took some other simple steps. We found that God does not make too hard terms with those who seek him. To us, the realm of the spirit is broad, roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding to those who earnestly seek. It is open, we believe, to all men.
I definitely had a lot of prejudice, having gone to a religious school where I was taught that the Jews are going to hell, the Catholics are going to hell, the Africans are going to hell if the missionaries haven't gotten to them first, whatever. And it was also the time of, do I need to be louder? That can't be right. It was also the time of Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson and every other hee-haw crazy person in the world. And, then, of course, they all cheated on their wives and robbed everyone blind. And I just figured, I've heard enough of this crap. I don't want to hear any more of it. These people are all hypocrites. Of course, I'm the biggest hypocrite of all, walking around saying I'm something that I'm not. But forget them. Just forget them. And I really thought that, and probably this is because how I think in general, I had to totally get my mind wrapped around who God was in order to be willing to believe in God. I cannot say that I ever believed in the group as my higher power, or a doorknob as my higher power. The ABCs are pretty clear. No human power. That seems pretty clear to me. But I did not know who that higher power was. And I really thought, I'm not going to be able to really give myself to this thing until I can totally understand it. And what I realized in the pursuit of that, reading tons of books, I think I heard David say this one time, I love spending tons of money and getting stacks of books. And I'll read a couple of pages, or I'll read the back, and then I'll act like I read it, kind of like how I used to do the steps. I went to a step study once a week, and that was how I did the steps. We read the steps. I was doing the steps. Anyway, I read all these books, trying to find out who God was. What I really found out was that this is a part of my controlling nature that I think that if I can accumulate enough information, I will somehow attain some kind of power over the topic. You know, I'll get it. I've got it. It's a done deal. And what I discovered in that pursuit was that there is absolutely no cheating this process. There was absolutely nothing I could do. I mean, I read books on chakras. I read books on Judeo-Christian theology. I mean, everything under the sun. It didn't make a difference because this, for me, is not a head thing. It's a heart thing. And the journey from my head to my heart is a really long one. Because I greatly prefer to have stuff up here in the control tower. I'm looking out at all of you. I'm up high, looking down. You know, I've got it going on. That's what I want to pretend. When it gets to my heart, and I start feeling kind of weak and a little funny in my stomach. You know, I don't want that. I want to. Actually, this is an interesting thing. My partner died 4 months ago, and he dropped dead in the living room, and it was bad. It's still bad. But instead of spending a whole lot of time like normal people crying and, you know, talking about him and whatever, I have read every book the Virginia Beach Public Library System has on grief. Every single book. Because, again, I'm trying to power through the process, you know, do an end run around feeling anything too deeply and just get control of it in my head. And it just doesn't work that way. You know, I've proudly told people over the past 4 months, I've never missed a day of work. I was at work the day after. I've done everything right. I even work 60 hours a week, blah, 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 blah. Well, the truth is that that is another function of my alcoholism. I'll run. I'll do anything not to feel my feelings. And the other part of my alcoholism is that I think my feelings are so important that that's how my life should be. And they're just feelings. I don't even know what we were reading now. What did we read? What paragraph was it?
Much to our 40. Reading.
Oh, much to our reading. Oh, okay. Okay, so yes. I definitely did not want to take anyone else's concept of God. Although it would be the easy way out, you know? If Jesus is a white hippie-looking dude, he's got blue eyes, he's really sweet. I mean, who'd I want to sit on that lap? But I don't mean that in a sexual way. I'm realizing that might have sounded... Did it? I meant it like in a love way.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to move on from that. I didn't believe in my mom's God because she had told us that if we had Jesus in our hearts, my dad would stop drinking. My dad never stopped drinking. My dad died drinking. All of the stuff, I just couldn't believe in those things. But I couldn't really believe in all the Asian stuff. I mean, the Buddhism, the Shintoism, the Taoism. I don't know. I can't really tell you because I'm just going to sound like a bigot. I'm going to get off that too. Anyway, it would be the easy way out to just kind of default into someone else's conception of God. But this process for me has been about allowing God to make himself known to me. Like, it is my way to launch out and gather all the information and then make a decision, and that's it, I'm done. And that doesn't work here. What works is that as I tell the truth of who I am, first to my sponsor, because I can't stand for anyone else to know, but later to you all, I start finding out that what a higher power is it's something that appears in relationships. It's something that doesn't demand that I do anything. Because what I know how to do is screw things up. What I know how to do is tackle you to the ground and beat you to a pulp, you know, so that I'm in charge, so I can feel okay about myself. What I know how to do is the opposite, because there's no doing here. And when I would hear people talk about, you know, we're human beings, we're spiritual beings having a human experience, you know, and we're not human doings, we're just human beings. That all went, as smart as I think I am, that really goes over my head. That is not something I can grab onto. But what I could grab onto was, like Mark said, I went from not being able to not drink to I'm not drinking. And not just not drinking, but it never came back. It never, there was no fight. There was no fight whatsoever. It never came back. There's this movie, Mr. Brooks. I don't know if y'all have seen it, but it's Kevin Costner, and they kind of pose him as addicted to murder. So he goes to 12 separate recovery groups. I don't think he ever, he doesn't tell anybody. He doesn't tell anybody what he's addicted to. But the way that they personify the disease is that when Kevin Costner is driving around in his car thinking about who he's going to kill next, William Hurt is the voice of the disease, and he's sitting in the back seat looking at him in the rearview mirror going, go on and do it. Do it. You know you're going to do it anyway. Just go ahead and do it. I think that that's such a good way to embody what happens in the mental obsession. But what happened, what made it clear that there had to be a God or a higher power operating was there was never anyone in the back seat for me again. It just went. And I couldn't have made that happen. I wanted to make that happen, but I couldn't. And that bothered me. I mean, yes, it's a gift, but it bothers me because I can't understand that. I can't comprehend that. Just like I can't really take in grace. There are a lot of people who say, oh, I got the gifts of sobriety, and I have to protect that gift. I'm kind of an earn it kind of person, which is unfortunate because I have a hard time just accepting that this is a gift. There is a power greater than me that loves me and wants everything to be okay. And, of course, I can't do anything about it. I can't do anything about that person, that God loving me, and I can't do anything to make myself feel worthy of it, except show up here. I thought for so long that I was showing up here and working the steps so that I could stay sober. Now I realize that I'm showing up here and I'm working the steps so that I can be worthy to accept the grace that's all around me. And it's still, I mean, I'm talking and talking and talking. I'm going to stop. But I can't even define grace. I can't even explain this miracle. And so to me, if I can't explain it, that must be God. If I could explain it, then it couldn't be God. So that's it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Amy. That was really some great stuff you said there. All right. Am I got the mic right now? All right.
No. You're just not allowed now.
You're just not very loud.
It's a good thing.
All right. Another concept of God. You know, is that mic really on?
I don't know.
Okay. All right, another concept of God. Yeah, I was there. I worried about that. I didn't like to say the word God because I didn't want somebody else to define what I really believed in, because I thought I really knew, and it was just way too deep and difficult to put into words. And that it really, if you put a discipline on your God or something, you had your own little twist to your God, I didn't want it. I really didn't want it. And that was kind of like a wall to me, between me and God, for many years, actually. And as soon as I did admit the possibility existed of a creative intelligence, a spirit of the universe, you know, I began to process the sense of a power and direction, provided I took these simple steps. And it is funny how it just comes down to a simple step. And you know, it's just amazing to me. It is as simple of a true surrender to a power greater than myself. You know, I don't know why it took, you know, 15 years or how many years I drank like that steady. I mean, I started drinking as a teenager. I'm sure it was more than that. And I drank every chance I could. I mean, I thought alcohol was the greatest thing that ever happened to me. My brother took me out drinking when I was a kid. I mean, just a young teenager. And I just was like, man, it just lit me up. I stuttered real bad as a kid. I could hardly talk. Got rid of all that. I could talk to people, meet people. And it just, I became on fire with it. And it was just really the best thing that ever happened to me to this surrender I went through and the transformation of life that happened at that point in my life. And this is one of the things that I am just so grateful for this program for. The realm of the spirit is broad, roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidden to those who honestly seek it. It's open, we believe, to all. It says men, but this is written 1935 or whatever year it was written there, but it's, you know, to all people. And that is the very thing that keeps us all in these rooms. I mean, if we had, you know, if I had a way out of here, I'd be gone. You know, I would. I'd be out of here. If I came in these rooms, and I used to think sometimes I'd, you know, the Oceanfront Conference was my home group for many years. And I'd go down there to... I'd sit down there and listen to some really great talks, and it's a great home group. But anyway, I learned a lot down there actually, and I'd sit there and I would just think that all these different people from all walks of life, and when I walked into St. Tim's years later, and Guy Russell was standing at the door, and he knew I was lost. I was wandering. I'd met him a few times. I wandered in, and he said, "Hey, Mark, come over here and stand by me." And I stood there by the door with him, and he said to me, he said, "Mark, there's people in here from all walks of life." He said, "It doesn't matter." He said, you can be, you know, a hippie in here. You can be of any race. You can love anybody you want, and this program will work for you if you let it work for you. And just take a few simple actions, And it's open to all people, and it's just, it's the very thing that keeps me coming back here week after week and hear people like Amy just share their story. And the person that really touched me, you know, was a drunk, lived on the street for years and years. And, you know, it's like, I go to the talking doctor once in a while, but, you know, it's like that, the drunk off the street, the plumber, you know, the ship captain, the person suffering from alcoholism that can walk in here and just tell us that there is a way to recover from the disease of alcoholism, and it's open and available to everybody. Tremendous, very powerful to me. I think that covers that paragraph.
Okay. All right. All right, the next reading's on page 47. It's a really good one. I like this part. We needed to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I now believe, or am I willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? As soon as a man can say that he does believe or is willing to believe, we emphatically assure him he is on his way. It has been repeatedly proven among us that upon the simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built.
I'm very much a doubter. I'm always looking for the loophole, and I love how the big book just shuts down all the loopholes before my magic mind can figure them out. And this question, do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe? I love that, because in my prior life of religious education, I was told that that God wanted blind faith from me, that God wanted me to believe and to not question. And, you know, and I would think to myself, well, how big and how smart is God if he doesn't stand up to questioning? It just never made sense to me. I couldn't give myself to that. But this willing to believe is is a good way for me to start. And this blueprint for living, it's not asking me to have blind faith. It's asking me to have a simple belief, just a willingness to believe. Then I'm going to take some actions in steps 4 through 9, and I'm going to get results. And those results are going to lead me to an absolute, unshakable faith. But nobody from the get-go is saying to me, you have to believe this. Because I would have left. I'm defiant. I don't want anybody being the boss of me. And this is couched in terms that don't scare me off and don't marginalize me in any way. It's all inclusive. Are you willing? Just willing to believe. And that was enough. I was talking to somebody before the meeting about, she was saying, I don't know who my higher power is. I don't really get this thing. People say, give it to your higher power, you know. And it's not, this isn't like that religiosity where I just throw myself upon the mercy of some benevolent God who is going to, in some miraculously inexplicable way, save me. What I'm going to do is I'm going to do my part, and my part is working the steps. My part is clearing off my side of the street. My part is taking responsibility for myself. And so I'm not just being thrown into something. I'm kind of baby stepping my way into it. And while my big brain is occupied working these steps and following these directions, God is going around and get into my heart, because my brain is occupied. I'm taking inventory, I'm making amends, blah, blah, blah. And my heart is opening up, and God is making himself known to me. I never did on any of my journeys to find God. I cannot tell you that I found God. What I can tell you is that as I work the steps, God finds me, and I allow him to do it. That's the best way I know how to surrender, because I'm not a person, you know, surrender to win is just breaks up in my mouth, because I'm a fight to the death kind of person. So using the word willing is a really big deal for me. It was like somebody reaching out a hand and saying, oh, come on, give it a try. And that's all I had to do. Thanks.
Okay. The surrender and the willingness to surrender. I mean, you can do a lot of things wrong in AA, and you can stay sober by surrendering to a power greater than yourself and become willing to just put forth just that little bit of effort, and the rest will follow. You know, you build it, it will come. And I became willing to believe. I did it with a drink in my hand, but I came willing, and I believe. And that cornerstone is strong, it's set, and it's wonderful, effective spiritual structure I built on top of it. And it's what's interesting about step two, and it says, you know, could restore me to sanity. And honestly, that, you know, I when I first read this, I thought sanity would happen pretty quick, but it really doesn't. You know, it takes a long time. And later in the book, it says in step 10, you know, sanity starts to return to us. And I thought that was really, you know, fascinating to me, because I think some days, you know, I still think, you know, that can have, I need to be restored to sanity, you know, and I have to surrender on a daily basis. Okay.
All right. I'm sorry, you're fine. All right, let's go on to page 568. We're running a little low on time, so I'm going to go ahead and read 568, and then we'll read this last one if we have time. It's appendix 2. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable.
I cannot say that step two was a big leap for me. What I really believe and what I experienced was that I got it in step one. I got that I had a death sentence, and that if I didn't actually just drop dead, I was going to wish I was dead. And so out of desperation, not out of virtue, you know, coming to Jesus or coming to belief, but out of desperation that I'm hopelessly screwed and I've put everything I have to bear on this and I can't budge it an inch, I just kind of fell into step two. It was just there. There's nowhere else to go. But this self, the thing in me that means that I concentrate on my own interests and without benefit of any external agencies. You know, I'm living in the world according to Amy. I don't care what you think. I don't care what you do. I got my own thing going. I was really married to that. And I can still fall into that very easily because I think I'm the captain of my own ship. I really do. There's another prayer that says, oh God, my boat is so small and the sea is so big. And that's pretty much what being the captain of my own ship feels like. It doesn't feel good. And so that's how I get to step two with barely any effort at all, because I absolutely saw the truth of step one. I was powerless. There was nothing I could do to make it right. I could not stop drinking. I could not stop mouthing off. I could not stop screwing people over. I could not stop my resentments. I couldn't talk myself out of them. There was nothing I could do. There was nowhere else to go. So I didn't make myself have a spiritual experience. I got myself into the right position. I got myself here. And in this position, that experience happened.
Honesty, willingness, open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery. This little thing here is another one of those things that, you know, opens the door for a lot of people that are still trying to form up their God image so they can, they're still building their altar they're going to pray for. And, you know, you can build your altar the rest of your life, but, you know, you got to have honesty and you got to have willingness. And the sanity is going to return with just a little bit of accepting your honesty, paying your consequences, paying your own way, accepting life the way it is. And that's what God does for us, is just says we're good enough the way we are. You know, that's my biggest fault, if I had to say something in life, is constantly trying to figure out, am I good enough the way I am? And honestly accepting myself for what I am. And let's see what else. I think that covers that too.
Okay. All right, I'm going to read this last paragraph, and if y'all share just a minute or two so we can close up the meeting on time. This is going to be on page 17. We are average Americans. All sections of this country and many of its occupations are represented, as well as many political, economic, social, and religious backgrounds. We are people who normally would not mix, but there exists among us a fellowship, a friendliness, and an understanding which is indescribably wonderful. We are like the passengers of a great liner, the moment after rescue from shipwreck, when camaraderie, joyousness, and democracy pervade the vessel from steerage to captain's table. Unlike the feelings of the ship's passengers, however, our joy in escape from disaster does not subside as we go our individual ways. The feeling of having shared in a common pearl is one element in the powerful cement which binds us, but that in itself would never have held us together as we are joined, as we are now joined. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree, that upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the greatest news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism.
This is definitely the great good news, that there is a common solution, and the common solution is in this book. I like that there's a warning that the fellowship in itself would never have held us together as we are now joined. I definitely spent a long time in AA thinking that being one of the popular girls and going to all the good meetings and going to lunch together with all my girlfriends and all that kind of stuff, I thought that that was sobriety. It was a very fellowship-based sobriety. And there's a warning here about that, that I will need to follow these directions. And the other thing that it really is important for me is we have a way out on which we can absolutely agree. I did not have a way out. I absolutely went down every path available to me looking for a way out, and there was no way out on my own without help, without asking for help from you, and then getting to God down that path. There was no other way out for me. And it says it right here. Really, it says everything right here. That's it.
Yes, I definitely wanted all the facts, but I didn't want to commit. And I would say that this here is, I think it, in so many ways, what I say about AA and the common peril is there is a special handshake in AA and a hug. But beyond that, I think sometimes, we got to remember that the person that comes in with alcohol in their breath may be still in the water, and we need to help them get them out. It's been great to be here, and thanks for asking me.
Thanks, Mark. All right, we're going to pass the seventh tradition basket.
That was really good. Thank you.
Thank you.
The seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that may divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Are there any AA announcements?
Kyle.
Sorry.
Hi, Kyle.
February 18th, Virginia State Conference of Young People in AA is having a workshop on Love and Tolerance is Our Code. It's going to be at 6,000 West Avenue. West Grove Avenue. There we go. West Grove Avenue in Richmond, Virginia. I believe from 6 to 8. If you're interested in going, please let me know. There's a group of us that are going.
Thanks, Kyle. Anybody else? All right. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, raise your hand. Newcomers, is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. What's your name?
James.
Hi, welcome. James. Welcome.
Michelle. Michelle.
Hi, Michelle.
I'm here.
Ben.
Ben, welcome.
Hi, Ben.
Welcome.
Great. All right. We have a literature table over here. See any home group member if you want to buy a book. If you can fold it, it's free. We'll help you out. Just come see one of the members. Sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Anyone willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. If you have any questions or need additional information about sponsorship, I'll be here up at the table. If you need to talk, come see me. All right, reminder, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. We have other church members coming in and out, and we don't want to smoke them out. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website at simpleactions.net. Can we thank the panel again, Mark and Jamie? Thank you guys. Thanks to all who participated. And after we clean up, we're encouraged to go talk about the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which is at the Mexican restaurant down the road. Just drive up Colonial, go. If you go over the railroad tracks, you've gone too far.
It's Plaza del Sol.
Plaza del Sol. There you go. But if you hit the railroad tracks, you've gone too far. All right. And Melissa has volunteered to read the last two paragraphs on page 164.
Hey, everybody. My name is Melissa. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Melissa.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. You realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of a happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you. All right, let's close with the Lord's Prayer. You want to take us out, Mark?
Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not to temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Keep coming back. It works if you work it.